I was interested in the one about the guy who had was attempting to, or was presumably in the back of a burned out car in the woods.
Right. Yeah. Down near the Tennessee-Alabama border. That was an interesting case. Oh, of course, we think all of them are interesting. When Dr. Bass and I are trying to decide what cases to talk about in a book to include, I'll bring up a case. I'll go through the files and I'll bring up a case, and he'll think for a minute and he'll say, "Oh, that was a good case." He never met a case he didn't like.
Right. Well, but then their own way. I mean, they're all fascinating, but it's particularly interesting when it can help bring a killer to justice.
Sure, sure. Now this. This guy in, whose burned body was found in the trunk of his car. What was really interesting about that case is, besides the burned bones that were found in the trunk of his car, and he was pretty well incinerated, they found the burned pupa cases from fly larvae that had basically cocooned, a fly larva, a maggot. Goes into a cocoon after it matures, just like a caterpillar goes into a cocoon and emerges as a butterfly. In the case of the fly, it's the maggot goes into a pupa case, and it emerges, a baby adult fly emerges. So in this case, they found burned pupa cases, which told them that the guy's body had been in the trunk for a while before it was burned, because the flies were there laying eggs and I'm sorry if this grosses anybody out, but the maggots are in there feeding on the body and maturing, and then they start to pupate. They start to metamorphose into flies, and it's only after they have done that, some of them, that the killers come back and decide, oh, we better cover our tracks a little bit better than this. So they torch the car and the body. About 2 weeks after they had initially dumped him there.
And the local law enforcement hadn't figured that part out.
No, they hadn't. It took the anthropology folks who have studied not only decomposition but also insect activity in human corpses to figure that out.
Right.
There's another great case. This was in our first book, which is called Death's Acre. Another great case where insects were actually the one piece of evidence that helped pin down the timing of a death and that shattered the alibi of the guy who did the killing. A guy who killed his stepson, his own stepson, the stepson's wife, and their four-year-old child. Just a horrible, horrific crime. He had taken out a $250,000 insurance policy on his 2-year-old granddaughter, basically.
Oh, gosh.
And he waited for 2 years, Ian, because there was a 2-year waiting period before you could collect death benefits. So this guy's like a rattlesnake wrapped around the ankles of this child.
Right.
He waits 2 years and a month or so, maybe, and then he stabs all three of them to death. And the only way that he was eventually arrested and he was tried, but the jury was hung because he did have an alibi for most of the period before the bodies were found. But then after the first mistrial, the prosecution called in Dr. Bass as a forensic consultant, and literally during the course of the second trial, he had not seen all of the photographs from the crime scene. Some of these were, for whatever reason, they weren't available to the prosecution. At some point during the second trial, Dr. Bass sees on an enlarged photograph being projected in the courtroom, he sees in the hair and around the scalp of the dead child empty pupa cases, which tells him that they had been dead for about 2 weeks or so before the bodies were found. There was nothing directly linking this guy. This is, again, a guy who murdered his stepson, the stepson's wife, and their 4-year-old daughter. He had taken the family up to a cabin where there's no telephone. He'd left them there, and about a month or so later, he went back and found their bodies, called the police, and is very upset. you know, because he's found the bodies of his family. Well, you know, as the police start looking into this, they found that that this guy had a history of insurance scams. And so this Mississippi State police investigator, you know, starts to think maybe this guy is the suspect.
Sure.
And finds that the guy's taken out $250,000 insurance policy on the child. But the problem was the guy was a cab driver in New Orleans, and you know he had an alibi for the two weeks before the bodies were found, and for a big chunk of time earlier in that month that they were up there. But he had gone up there at one point about halfway through their visit, so he did have a window of opportunity. But the question is, you know, is that when the crime was committed? And Dr. Bill Bass, the anthropologist who was called in to consult between the first trial and the second trial, saw in a photograph, saw the insect casings that the fly larva had left in the hair and the scalp of one of the victims. Literally, you know, during the courtroom testimony of one of the defense witnesses. These were photographs Dr. Bass hadn't been given to look at initially. Now, bear in mind, these murders had been committed years before. This is a pretrial. So he wasn't at the actual crime scene. So he's just spotting this in a photograph. And I mean, it was a very Perry Mason-like moment. He's practically saying, you got to stop this trial. Here's some new evidence. And the guy, on the strength of that was the one thing that undercut his alibi. And on the strength of that, he was convicted of these killings, and he's on death row in Mississippi.
Now, but how did it undercut it? What did it prove?
Well, it proved that the murders had happened 2 weeks before the bodies were found, and that was the one time that he was known. He had admitted he had been up there at the cabin.
To have been up there
before. Now he claimed they were alive and well.
Right.
But the insect evidence proved that they were not alive and well, that they were dead, and insects were, you know, starting to, the flies were starting to get to the bodies.